Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the Red Sea Podcast, part of the Over the Monster Network.
Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions.
Hosted by Jake Devereaux.
It's gone. It's into the bullpen. This game is tied. This game is tied. David Ortiz.
And featuring Keaton DeRosier.
It's a grand slam. I'm telling you.
Welcome back to another episode of, I guess, this is the Red Seat Podcast? I probably should have checked with Jake before I did this. It's either the Red Seat Podcast or the Over the Monster Podcast. I guess it doesn't really matter what I call it. It's all in the same feed. But if you are hearing this and you've listened before, you know that my voice, it is Matt Collins, and I always butcher these openings anyway, so I'm not really stressing about it. Lucky for me, today, though, I'm not with Jake, which is a nice little change of pace. I am instead with Shelly. Shelly, what's going on with you?
It's going okay. Just kind of watching the playoffs here and trying to get away from real life. So, yeah, it's going all right.
I gotta say, one of the good things about the Reds, nothing going on with the Red Sox right now, is that I don't have to be online as much anymore because we live in hell, so I don't have to see constant updates unless I really want to.
Exactly.
But we are not going to talk about any of that because nobody wants to hear that. Instead, we are going to talk about the Red Sox, who, while they have nothing going on right now, obviously they are doing some work in the front office to get prepared for the coming offseason. It is going to be a busy one for Chaim Bloom and company over at Fenway. There is a lot to do on this roster, to say the least. Earlier this week, or over the weekend, I guess I should say, I wrote an article at Over the Monster about just some general to-do points on Chaim Bloom's offseason list. Obviously, there's more specifics than what I wrote, but we're going to kind of go through some of this general stuff that is on Bloom and the rest of the front office's plate. And I mean, I think we have to start at the obvious place. So the Red Sox, as we know by now, they decided not to bring Ron Reinecke back for the 2021 season. That was not a surprise to anybody, but without a manager in tow, that is clearly job number one for the front office, figure out who's going to be running the dugout. And we can't really talk about this search without talking about Alex Cora first. So before they can even really start going headfirst into interviews and kind of figuring out where they want to go, I think the first thing that they have to do is just kind of make a binary decision as to whether or not Alex Cora can really be considered here. So I guess there's kind of two directions we can look at this from, and we'll go with both. I mean, whether or not we think they should be looking at Alex Cora as a viable candidate and whether or not they will. So I will let you start, and we'll start with, do you think they should?
Alex Cora has like always been kind of like this kind of thing that I knew that we were going to have to deal with in the offseason. I didn't really want to, I generally liked how he managed, especially, you know, when it came to the bullpen, and then, like, his, you know, kind of, like, discussion with Rafael Devers and how he kind of, like, discussed kind of things and how he kind of, like, and seeing, like, Rafi's kind of comments. And Rafi was, like, really good defensively at third base. And it's, like, Alex Cora is, like, a really good guy to kind of, like, calm him down. So I would like to see Alex Cora back for that. Other than that, I just don't see the Red Sox bringing him back. It's too much of, you know, a black mark on the team if we do.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree with your last point. I don't think they're going to want to cross that bridge. I think ownership would be totally okay with it. I think it was pretty clear from pretty much Cora's entire tenure, and especially the press conference where they announced that he wasn't going to be the manager anymore. Him and ownership were close, and I think they would be on board with bringing him back, but I don't think Chaim Bloom wants to bring him back, and I think that part of it is the sign stealing stuff and his connection with the Astros and all that, but I also think Bloom probably just wants, I mean, I think the term, like, his guy when we talk about managers with GMs is a little bit overused, but I think Bloom wants a guy that he has a relationship with and that he is, like, if Alex Cora comes back, this is Alex Cora's team and Chaim Bloom's kind of the number two. That's just, Cora's won a World Series here, he has that rapport with the players, and that's not a bad thing, but I think Bloom will, and I mean, arguably should use this opportunity to kind of have a collaborator that they're at least on equal footing. I just don't know that that's possible with Alex Cora. As far as my feelings on Cora, I like Alex Cora a lot. He seems like a really good guy. You mentioned all that with Rafael Devers. I think a really underrated part of the Cora relationship with players was actually with Eduardo Rodriguez. Cora was bizarrely tough on Rodriguez publicly in a way that he wasn't with other people or other players on the team. He kind of trashed Rodriguez a lot in press conferences, but it never really seemed mean-hearted. It just kind of seemed like Cora knew that's how you get to Rodriguez, and I think the way that he worked with players was great, and I think he's a great manager, but at the same time, I can't get past the Astros thing, and to a lesser extent, I can't really get past the Red Sox thing, and I think there's a fair argument that Cora was thrown under the bus and kind of made out to be a bigger part of the Astros thing than he really was, and the players obviously played a big role too, and acting like Cora was like the lone mastermind and the players are kind of following the leader, I think is a little overblown, but at the same time, he was a leader. He was one of the top two coaches in the dugout, and I don't think he should be banned from baseball or anything, but I don't think it's unreasonable to think that somebody who got caught in two cheating scandals, one of which is one of the biggest scandals of like the last century in the sport, shouldn't be able to reach back to the pinnacle of the profession, which is managing. So, I mean, I think if teams want to hire him as like a front office guy or even like a bench coach or something like that, I think that's fine, but I don't think that he should manage again, and I would rather not root for a team that he's managing for. As much as I like him both as a manager and just as a guy, he seems like a really great guy. I just think it's a bridge too far for me.
Yeah, I kind of agree. Like, I do think that, you know, he's, like you said, like, he's a really, really good player, like, a communicator with players. Like, he can really communicate well. And, I mean, I did see, like, this weekend, like, he's, you know, he's in the running with AJ Hinch, which I find is funny. You know, they're going to kind of interview for the Tigers opening, which might be interesting. But, yeah, I mean, if I was a team, if I could get him as a bench coach, front office, something, because he is a great communicator, he's a really good dude, but I just don't really want to be around the, you know, Astros trash can.
Yeah, exactly. I'd just rather not deal with it. And, I mean, all of that being said, I'm not going to lie. If they do hire Alex Cora, there will be a significant part of me that's excited for all of the reasons I said. So, I mean, there's definitely some hypocrisy there with me that I will readily admit, but if I had my way, I would just, I think I would rather they just move in a different direction.
I agree, yeah.
So if we're crossing Alex Cora off the list, which obviously we can't actually do that in real life, and there's a decent chance that it happens, but there's also a decent chance that it doesn't, so I mean, there's a lot of possible names right now. The Red Sox kind of keep this stuff close to the vest with their manager searches in the past, at least. So I don't know how much we're actually going to hear about who they're interested in and things like that. I mean, the Tigers came right out and said Alex Cora and AJ Hinch. That's not really how the Red Sox are going to roll. but with that being said, are there any names, even if they haven't really been said officially, that you are interested in and that you would probably favor them hiring?
Yeah, I kind of like did some just kind of like research, because I mean, again, like you said, the Red Sox kind of really keep this close to the best. But there's a Rays bench coach, Matt Quatero. He spent the last two seasons as a bench coach. He's also worked with Tito in Cleveland as an assistant hitting coach. Like, I've heard some like really good things. And, you know, so he's got, like, a lot of ties, quote-unquote, to the Red Sox, you know, especially if he's Rays, maybe working with Tito. Matt Kotze, he interviewed with the Giants this offseason before they hired
Mark Kotze. Kapler. Mark Kotze?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he interviewed the Red Sox, too.
Yeah, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, so, you know, those two guys I think would be... maybe some interesting guys. I will put Jason Varitek out there because that's always the rumor, but I just don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm not betting on Varitek. Jake and I had talked about this a couple weeks ago, and what I said then I still feel now. I'm not, in the past I kind of just like laughed it off as kind of a ridiculous thing that fans wanted but wasn't actually really going to happen. This year, I still certainly think it's less than 50%, and I think there are a handful of other guys that I would put ahead of him on the list of likeliness to happen, but I wouldn't like be totally blown away if it happened, just because he was with the team this year, and he's obviously respecting the organization, so it's more possible this year than it has been in years past, at least. Yeah, I mean, I think Quatraro is probably the front runner. At least in my mind, I mean, this is total speculation. This is no inside information, but it just seems like the perfect fit. He's been sort of pegged as a future manager for a few years now. He obviously has the Heim Bloom connection. The Rays, as much as I hate the Rays, if you're looking for on-field strategy and kind of working analytics into your on-field product and your day-to-day managing, I mean, you don't look any further than the Rays. They roll out with a different lineup every single day. They do weird things with the bullpen and with their defense. So I think he's probably the favorite, and he would probably be my favorite of external candidates, at least. Another guy that I've always really liked, I wanted them to hire him last winter. I believe I wanted them to hire him when Alex Cora got hired as well. But Hensley Mullins, I actually don't even know how to say his name, it's kind of embarrassing. But he's been a coach for a long time. He spent a long time coaching in San Francisco, working under Bruce Bochy, who's obviously one of the best managers the last like quarter century or so, one of the best managers ever, really. He has managed for the Netherlands in the World Baseball Classic, which is high-level baseball, and also is the team that Xander Bogaerts has played on. He has a reputation for being really good with players, sort of a la Alex Cora, and he speaks a bunch of different languages, which obviously helps with that as well. So Hensley Mullins is one of my favorites. Another sort of under-the-radar name to look for is George Lombard. He is the first base coach for the Dodgers. It'd be kind of a big jump. It's probably not going to happen, but he's a guy that's sort of bubbling up as somebody that people see as a future manager, so the Red Sox could try and strike early. They also have some familiarity with him as he coached in the Red Sox system for a long time earlier in like the early 2010s down in the minors. So they know him well. presumably they liked him. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets an interview. Like I said, he's probably a bit of a long shot. But, yeah, I mean, I think, like I said, Quartararo probably number one in terms of who I want and who I think will get it. But Mullins and Lombard are some other names I would look forward to.
Yeah, I totally forgot about Mullins. Yeah, I think he would be a really, really good guy to be manager for this team as well.
Yeah, he's gotten interviews and for like every managerial opening for like 5 years now. So it's weird that he hasn't gotten a chance yet. I don't know if he's just a bad interviewer or what's going on there, but at some point he's going to get his chance. So I'd like to see it for the Red Sox.
Totally, yeah.
But yeah, so we'll obviously keep you updated. Hopefully, I mean, usually we find out when they at least bring guys in for interviews. I don't even know how that's going to work this year with COVID. Are they even going to bring guys in? Probably not, which means that we're not going to really hear anything. It was just Zoom meetings.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking that we're just, like, basically going to have, like, a press conference and someone's going to be announced.
Yeah, at some point, somebody, like, Alex Speer is going to tweet out, like, the Red Sox are having a press conference tomorrow at noon and they're going to hire Matt Quartararo or whoever they're going to hire.
Yeah.
So that's fun. It's not like we're looking for anything to talk about ever. But, yeah, so that's going to be number one on the list for the Red Sox this offseason. But beyond the manager, there's also obviously a lot to figure out with the players. And it's a really interesting winter coming up for the Red Sox. I mean, obviously, the number one thing is that their team is bad, and they need to make it good. So, I mean, the big thing is who they're going to sign for the Major League roster to make them more competitive in 2021. I don't know if anybody's really looking at them to be a division favorite or anything like that, but just a decent product to put on the field. So that's the big thing, and that's going to be a focus for other days. But they also have a really interesting 40-man situation coming up. So the Red Sox don't have a ton of guys leaving the 40-man. I believe Jackie Bradley Jr. is actually their only free agent this year. So they have a full 40-man, but there's going to be a lot of non-tenders and stuff, which we're going to get to in a second. But all of that is important because they have a glut of prospects that they will need to add to the 40-man to protect them from the Rule 5 draft. I don't believe there's a date out for when that has to be done, but it's usually like mid to late November when they need to figure that out. And so this year, the Red Sox, by my count, have six for sure slam dunk. They're gonna add them to protect them. And then there are a few interesting names kind of on the periphery of that list that could be added. So before we kind of get to the fringier names, I just want to make sure that we're on the same page with the slam dunks. Anybody you disagree with that will be protected on this list. I have Jay Groom, Brian Mata, Hudson Potts, Jason Rosario, Connor Siebold, and Connor Wong as sure bets.
Yep, lock it and load it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I think some people might be surprised by Groom just because he hasn't pitched basically at all and really hasn't pitched above a ball in his career, and obviously if he gets picked in the Rule 5 draft, he has to spend time in the majors, but it's not very hard to hide a pitcher if a team did pick him if he went unprotected, and the upside is just enormous, so there's really
I totally agree. I mean, this year was supposed to be like his big season to kind of, you know, do some things, but you know, COVID happened and all that stuff. But he's looked good at Sim City. So, he's definitely a lock.
And then as far as the other names go, Brian Mata, obviously, he's relatively close to the majors and one of their top prospects. Connor Wong, same thing. They traded for him in the Mookie Betts deal. He probably would have split this year between AA and AAA. So he's right on the verge. And then Potts, Rosario, and Siebold were all deadline acquisitions, and the reason they were able to get those three guys, Siebold was part of the Workman-Hembree deal. Potts and Rosario were in the return for, or the entire return for Mitch Moreland. All three of those guys kind of seemed more valuable than what the Red Sox had given up, but the reason that they were able to get them is because they were Rule 5 eligible. So the Red Sox we're not going to trade for those guys and then just leave them unprotected in the Rule 5 draft. That wouldn't have made any sense.
Exactly. Yep.
So beyond that, there are some other names that could be considered. Certainly not slam dunks. Probably a decent argument. They're all kind of less than 50%, but I think there's an argument for all of them to be protected, or if unprotected, for somebody to take a chance on them. Starting with Edward Bizzardo. Bizzardo is a right-handed reliever, has had success in the high minors, was sort of surprisingly left unprotected in last year's Rule 5 draft and didn't get picked. That is the biggest reason why I think he won't be protected this year. He wasn't part of the aforementioned Sim City in Pawtucket, so teams haven't really gotten a chance to see him. But given how good he was just a couple of years ago, it's not impossible. And, I mean, he's Major League ready.
Yeah, it was, I mean, going back to last year, I was surprised that he wasn't protected, and then I was definitely surprised that he wasn't selected. So I'm thinking that Heimblum, you know, especially because he wasn't part of some city. I'm hoping that, you know, maybe they're thinking that they can sneak him through one more season. But if he does get at it, I won't be surprised.
Yeah, I kind of get the feeling that Bloom isn't all that high on him. I mean, mm-hmm. just given the churn of pitchers that we saw this year, you would think if they liked him, even not protecting him, they would have found a way to get him at the alternate site and potentially get up to the majors. I mean, we saw how many innings from, like, Robert Stock and Matt Hall and all these guys.
That's fair.
So I think if they liked Bizzardo, they would have seen him. I like Bizzardo. I think he is a major league arm. I was impressed when I've seen him in Portland in 2019. I think he has stuff. He doesn't have back of the bullpen kind of stuff. His fastball isn't really that big, and I don't know that his breaking ball is good enough to get him to that level, but I think he's a major leaguer. But I don't know that the Red Sox agree with me.
Yeah, I agree.
Another name would be Pedro Castellanos. Castellanos has sort of been a weird guy in the system for a few years now. He's a first baseman, which probably hurts his chances of being protected. It's not as easy to hide a guy in the active roster all year when he doesn't really have any defensive versatility, and he's a first base only profile. That said, the bat is good. The issue with his bat throughout his minor league career has been that he just hasn't been able to hit for power in games. In batting practice, he has been bananas with his power, and scouts haven't really understood how that's worked because it hasn't shown up in games. But then second half in 2019, he started hitting for power out of nowhere in games. He had 8 home runs in his last 30 games of that season. Some people started to think that he was finally showing it, so it was, I think he was one of the players most affected by not being able to play in the minors this year to kind of show that it was for real. And I think if he had been able to do that, I think he would have been a guy that they would have been looking to add to the 40-man. But since, again, we didn't get to see him, he also wasn't part of that group in Pawtucket, I don't really see them protecting him, but I think he's talented enough to be considered.
I totally agree. Castellanos has just always been a guy where I'm just like, I've just been so confused because I've, you know, seen BP, I've heard about BP from scouts, and he looks amazing, and then he puts up like zero power. But the dude can hit. He really can. But I agree. I don't think that he is going to be protected because there's just really no way a team really could just keep him on their, you know, their roster for an entire year. You know, he didn't get over high A. He hasn't had a lot of power. So I don't think that he's going to be added.
Yeah, it would have to be like a team like the 2019 Orioles kind of team that just like hasn't been trying since the start, and they're just going to put whoever on their roster they think can help in like 3 years. But I don't know that team really exists looking ahead to next year, and even if it does, they're going to be picking early enough in the Rule 5 draft that they're going to be getting a couple players better than Castellanos.
Yeah.
And then, who else do I have on this list? Another guy, this has been... Sometimes I feel like I'm on an island with him. I don't really know how other people feel about him, so I'm interested to hear your thoughts on Yoan Martinez. I've always sort of been in love with the idea of Martinez, I think more than Martinez himself. But he is sort of the prototypical surprise Rule 5 draft in that he's a reliever, which makes him very easy to hide, and he has big stuff with very raw command. So I'm curious to hear what you think of Martinez just in general and as a Rule 5 kind of guy.
I mean, he has, you know, really, really good stuff, but he honestly just doesn't know where it's going. If a team wanted to hide him, I could see it, but knowing that he's already 24 years old and hasn't gotten above high A, I really do doubt it. But I'm intrigued by the stuff, but I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think they'll protect him. I don't think he'll get taken either. But man, it just takes one team to see a guy that throws 100. He doesn't sit 100, but he can hit 100 and he'll sit like 97, and he's got a slider that can work. He's got a changeup that can work. He was really good in 2019, and then he got hurt, and that kind of put things on pause for a little bit, and he wasn't quite the same when he first got back. He's another guy, kind of like Castellanos, that I think is really one of the guys that was most affected by not being able to play this year.
Yeah, totally agree.
Let me see if there's any other names on this list. Looking quickly, I mean, there's a few that stand out as like personal favorites, but not really anybody that's gonna get taken. Like Cutter Crawford, I like, but he's coming off an injury. I don't even know when he's gonna be ready to pitch again. Chad De La Guerra, guy that I like. He's a guy I think you could hide, but I don't know that he doesn't really have the upside that a rebuilding team would want to hide, and he's not really good enough right now that a win now team would want to hide.
Yep, totally agree.
Tate Matheny's a guy that I really like, big makeup, really good defensively, but he's like a fifth outfielder. Yeah, there's really nobody else that I see. I don't know if you had any other names that you were thinking of.
Yeah, I didn't really have any other names either.
Yeah, but I mean, even so, that's six definites and three fringy, probably not, but at least you're thinking about it. And it doesn't, at first, like when you first start thinking about it, you look at this Red Sox roster and you're like, oh, it's not really that hard to find six guys to jettison off this roster, but it's not that simple because obviously they need to add multiple players to the roster as well. So it's a big crunch, and that kind of takes us to the second to last to-do list item for the Red Sox, which is who they're going to tender contracts to. So the Red Sox and every other team, anybody who is eligible for arbitration or is pre-arbitration eligible needs to be tendered a contract before, I don't remember when that date is, all the dates are mixed up, but at some point in the offseason they need to figure out what they're doing with all of the guys who are not already under a guaranteed contract for 2021, and there is a lot of them. So we'll just quickly go through pretty much everyone. We can spend a little more time on some of the fringier ones, but I think most of them are fairly obvious. And I'm just going to start from the top of, I'm looking at Cott's contract, so if I'm missing anybody, yell at them. Don't yell at me, because I am just reading off their list. But Eduardo Rodriguez, he's a really interesting guy looking ahead to 2021, but there's no way they don't tender him a contract.
Exactly, yep.
Matt Barnes, they're going to tender him a contract.
Yep.
Jose Peraza, I would assume they're not going to.
Yeah, he gone.
Yeah, Peraza didn't even finish the year on the Major League roster. Still baffling that they signed him instead of Brock Holt, although Brock Holt didn't make his make it through the year with his original team either.
Yeah.
Zach Godley? What are you thinking on Zach Godley?
Yeah, I think he's gone too. He entered the end of the year with an injury to his arm, so yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't even know if he's going to be able to pitch. He's the kind of guy that I could see. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to give him a major league contract this offseason, so I could see him making his way back on a minor league deal, especially if he likes the Red Sox training staff. You kind of see that. He's got an elbow injury, so this could be something that goes into next year. So sometimes you see that with guys who just like want to be with the medical staff. And plus, the Red Sox, obviously, we don't know what they're doing with the pitching staff, but it's hard to think that there's not going to be a lot of opportunity on the staff next year as well. So, yeah, I would agree. He's not going to be on the 40-man. I wouldn't be terribly surprised if he's back in the organization, though.
Yeah, sure.
Kevin Plawecki.
Yeah, totally. He's totally on the team.
Yeah, I think so too. I think Davey Grillon, who they picked up off waivers, is a really interesting future backup. But I think for next year you can live with him as your third catcher, because in a full season you generally need more than two catchers. So Kevin Plawecki was good enough this year to earn his way back.
Yep.
Dylan Covey.
No.
Yeah, I had enough Dylan Covey in my life for 1 year. Rafael Devers, obviously, coming back.
Yep.
We'll talk a little bit more about Devers in a few minutes with respect to his contract. Let's see. Alex Verdugo, obviously, being tendered. Ryan Weber? Weber is not arbitration eligible, so he would only be paid the minimum.
Yeah, I think they'll bring him back. I think that he... Once he got out of the rotation for a bit, and he was just kind of like this opener or just kind of like bullpen guy, he's okay.
Yeah, he seems like a guy that you can kind of live with as sort of a poor man's Brian Johnson a la 2018. A guy that can kind of swing between the rotation and the bullpen, and if you need a roster spot for a prospect or whatever in like the second week of May, he's not hard to DFA if you need to find that space.
Yeah.
Nick Pivetta, they wouldn't have traded for him if they weren't going to keep him around.
Exactly.
Jeffrey Springs, like Ryan Weber, would be making the minimum.
No. I don't know.
See, I think he will be back. Springs has kind of been my pet pitcher this year. He was horrendous in his first couple outings, and I think that kind of put him in sort of the Matt Hall zone with a lot of people. But he was really solid for...
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Like 4 weeks there in the middle of the season, he had a lot of strikeouts this year, which kind of surprised me a little bit. He didn't really strike me as that guy, although it shouldn't have been that surprising looking at his numbers in the minors. But I mean, he's got a major home run problem, and that is certainly worrisome, but I think for the minimum they'll bring him back. He also has options, so you can start him down in the minors.
Okay, definitely.
Ryan Brazier.
I think so too.
I think he's the second best reliever in the bullpen right now, maybe third, depending on how you feel about Tarwinson Hernandez. But I also think that probably says more about the bullpen than Brazier himself.
but
you gotta work with what you have, so I think he'll be back. This is an interesting one. Both of us had Marcus Walden as our predicted unsung hero heading into the year. And we whiffed pretty badly on that one. So what do you think happens with Walden next year?
He looks so bad this year. He looks so lost. I think that they do, but I would definitely not be surprised if they don't tender him a contract.
Yeah, I kind of am leaning towards them not. This is the first time I've thought about it. So I might change my mind if I think about it a little bit more. I know he didn't really throw that many innings, and I'm really trying hard. For most guys, I'm kind of writing off every number that they put up this year. But he, like you said, he looked so bad.
Yeah.
He's another guy I could see trying to bring back on a minor league deal. But I wouldn't, given how many 40-man spots they need, I would have to do the math a little bit and see how many spots I think would reasonably be opened up before I commit, but my gut is that I think he's a non-tender.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, like you said, like they have so many guys that they need to add, so yeah, you're probably right. But man, we totally whiffed on him.
Yeah, I really was high on him coming into the year. He was he was terrible. Josh Taylor kind of had a lost year, but I think he'll be back.
Yeah, I think so too.
Austin Bryce.
Yeah, I think so. I kind of like what he did this year.
Yeah, he's a solid. I don't think you want him in your top like four in your bullpen, but if you can kind of put him in like a middle relief role, I think that's fine.
Yeah.
Michael Chavis, I think is interesting in that he might be a trade candidate, but I think they're certainly going to give him a deal.
Yeah, I agree. While I'm not the biggest fan, there's still something there.
Yeah. If you give up on him, you have to at least get something back.
Yeah.
Zhuwei Lin.
This kills me because I love the dude, but I don't think so.
Yeah, I agree. I think if he had options left, it would be a different story. But I don't think that there's room for him on the active roster at this point. Not guaranteed.
Yeah.
Not a
guarantee. Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's like so many like more like the util types that have options and Lynn doesn't, so yeah.
Colton Brewer didn't really pitch a lot this year. I kind of forgot about Colton Brewer.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, because, like you said, like, he didn't really pitch that much this year. So, they traded for him last year. So, maybe. He's like in a maybe camp.
Yeah, he's sort of on the fringe, too. I kind of lean towards them tendering him a deal. They kind of put him in an impossible situation when he did pitch this year. This feels like so long ago. It wasn't really that long ago. He was starting. They made him a starter this year, which is really weird and something that I had just memory holed, apparently. but yeah, I mean, I think that means that they at least like him. So I think they'll bring him back. But I don't think he's a super slam dunk.
Like you, I totally forgot that he started this year.
Yeah, that was so weird.
Very. 2020 is great.
Yeah, what happened there? Darwinson Hernandez, obviously.
Yep.
Christian Arroyo, I would say, played his way into a deal.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree there.
Matt Hall, I would say, is probably gone.
I hope so.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see Matt Hall again. Phillips Valdez, seems like an easy yes.
Yep,
agree. Jonathan Arauz, definitely.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And then there's some. I'm not going to go through the rest of this list. Let me see. There's some guys. There's some prospects that I think we'll probably talk about later. We don't really have to get into it now, but I will say that I think Yoan Ivar, CJ Chatham, Kyle Hart are interesting. They don't have to be tendered a deal exactly, but I think they might get taken off the 40-man roster. But again, we can get into that stuff later. A couple other names I do want to throw out there, though, would be guys like Chris Mazza.
I actually didn't dislike him this year. So, yeah, maybe. I think that he could be kind of like maybe one of like those fringe guys. I mean, when he was starting there like towards the end of the season, I thought he wasn't horrible. So, yeah.
Yeah, I called Mazza my sort of Stockholm syndrome guy. Like, I watched so many bad pitchers. He looked good. And I think I definitely overrated him in my head a little bit. But yeah, he looked like a confident major leaguer at least, which is saying something.
Yeah.
Yairo Munoz, I think for sure played his way onto the roster.
Agreed.
Let me see. Cesar Puello?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't either. He doesn't have options, which I think, as with Lynn, definitely plays against him. And the last one would be Andrew Triggs, and he is arbitration eligible.
I think so. I don't know. I was kind of impressed with like a few of his kind of starts. I mean, he's always had injury issues, you know, when he was with the A's and all that, but I didn't dislike what he did.
Yeah, I think he's another guy that I would have to do the math and figure out exactly how many roster spots there are. On the one hand, he does have options. On the other hand, he's going to be 32 next year. He's kind of... And so is Marcus Walden, which is kind of surprising. I sort of lean towards no, but I would have to think harder about that.
Yeah, that's fair.
So that's a long list of players that are not very impressive. And that's sort of what the Red Sox are dealing with right now. But before we get into listener questions, the final thing on my to-do list for Bloom, and something that's probably pushed back until later in the offseason after they figure out free agency and trades and kind of set the roster for 2021, is to start thinking about extensions for some of their big players. So there's four guys that seem like viable extension candidates. Three, I think, would be exciting extensions. Another one would be sort of interesting. The last one I'm talking about there is Andrew Benintendi. But I want to start with the first three, which would be Xander Bogaerts, Rafael Devers, Alex Verdugo. Bogaerts has an opt-out in his deal after 2022. Devers is a free agent after 2023. Verdugo is a free agent after 2024. So none of these guys are free agents even after next season. This isn't something that needs to be done imminently, but obviously the sooner you can get guys like this locked up in a long-term deal, the better. So I guess I'm curious your thoughts on sort of how you would order those three in terms of priority.
Yeah, I've been kind of like thinking about this all day once I put this kind of like note sheet together. And I think I kind of wrote it down wrong. I actually think that I would have it Bogaerts, Verdugo, Devers. And I've been kind of thinking about this because when it comes to Devers, I love the dude. I think he's a really, really good hitter. It's just like this year he really struggled because he came to camp kind of unfit, you know, kind of a little bit heavy. Bogaerts and Verdugo, I just think that they were going to be like super dependable guys, and Devers is the more volatile of those three. So I think I would go Bogaerts, Verdugo, Devers. What about you?
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I would also have Bogaerts first. Part of that for me is simply that he's up first. Assuming that opt-out is in play, which I would assume it is. So I think that's a big deal. I think he's also sort of the glue of the roster in a weird way.
Agreed.
He's sort of always been the natural leader. Even when Mookie Betts was here, Mookie Betts was clearly the best player on the team. It always felt like Bogaerts was sort of the guy in the clubhouse that everyone went to. He sort of is liked by everybody. I think he's the kind of guy, even more so than a Devers or a Verdugo, who are certainly better plays in the long term just because they're so much younger. I think Bogaerts is the kind of guy that you want to keep forever.
I agree.
But I would have Devers ahead of Verdugo. And part of that is certainly a bias, both because I've seen Devers more than I've seen Verdugo, and also fairly or unfairly Verdugo for me, and it's unfair to be quite honest, Verdugo didn't have anything to do with this, but he's the guy that replaced Mookie Betts, and that's tough. All that being said, I think Verdugo's fantastic. The more baseball reason and the more sort of grounded reason that I would have Devers ahead of Verdugo is that I think I agree with the concerns about Devers' defense, and the stuff about him coming in out of shape is obviously a concern. I would hesitate to be too worried about it unless it happened again next year. I believe he had a kid last offseason. I would assume that kind of played into it a little bit. But even putting all that aside, I'm confident he's going to be one of the best hitters in baseball, regardless of where he's playing on the field. And he's one of a handful of guys that you can say, I don't care where they play, as long as they're in my lineup. Verdugo was fantastic this year. I want to see it a little more. Not that I don't think he's a fantastic hitter, but I think he's more of like a 120-ish WRC plus guy. He actually finished 126. I thought he was higher than that. But I think he's a little worse than what he showed this year. And I don't know. I think he's more of a really good player, whereas Rafael Devers can be one of the five best hitters in baseball for the next decade.
Yeah, that's totally fair. And maybe I'm just kind of like poo-pooing on Devers this year because he really started off like really bad.
I think that's a trend with him. I think if I remember correctly, he started off badly.
He did last year as well. Yeah, he did. You're right. Like, he started off like really bad, and caught on fire.
I mean, I think that's a concern, and I think that probably goes back to coming in out of shape too. I don't remember really hearing those concerns as much as in 2019, but. I mean, it's certainly not a good thing to start off poorly. I think it just stands out a little bit more in a season like this where you're only playing 60 games and you only have like a month or 5 weeks or whatever to recover from it.
Yeah, I agree. I do agree that, I mean, if we could, extend like all these guys, that'd be great. The Devers Verdugo thing, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think you could go in either direction. I certainly don't think it's unfair to put Verdugo ahead just because he has a higher floor. Like, if Devers, for some reason, one reason or another, doesn't hit or is just like an okay hitter, there's really not much he's bringing to the table. Whereas Verdugo, if he's a league average hitter, he's also providing really good defense in right field, and he can kind of move all around the outfield, and he should be a good base runner. I think he's got to rein it in a little bit, but I think he'll get there. He's still young.
Yeah, definitely.
So I guess before we move on to the questions, and we'll get to Benintendi in the questions. The first question is a Benintendi extension question. But with these three, Devers, Bogaerts, Verdugo, do you think any of them get extended? And if so, who is the most likely this offseason?
This offseason, I think that it would be Bogaerts. Like, I really honestly think that he likes being a part of the club, likes being a part of the team. And I think that they could, you know, get him out of that opt-out and stuff. So, I honestly, if you, out of the three, I think it would be Bogaerts.
I think I agree. I don't think anybody's getting extended. Mostly because I don't really feel comfortable predicting anything financially this winter. I don't know. I have no idea what this offseason is going to look like for anybody. And I mean, Lord knows I've said enough about the Red Sox ownership. I don't think this is a Red Sox ownership problem. I think this is a Major League Baseball owner's problem. And I think this winter is going to be even weirder than what we've gotten used to in the last few years. And if that's the case, I think Bogaerts would be the hardest to extend just because he'll make the most money in 2021 with an extension.
Yeah.
Like, Devers and Verdugo might make as much through the duration if they buy out enough free agent years and it is a big enough extension, but I think just in the short term, which would be the concern coming off a pandemic year, that would be the issue. But I think in a normal offseason, Bogaerts would make the most sense. Just this year, everything's weird.
Yeah.
All right, so that will do it for that. We have a good number of listener questions today. We're going to start with Glove is Life, Richard Banks. Richard Banks did the classic celebrity apology move where he took a screenshot of a tweet that was too long. I kind of respect it. But so he says, I'd like to hear your opinion on possible extension candidates, which we did all that, but he also said, could Benintendi be a candidate for a 3-year deal to buy out arbitration and a free agent year or two? Could that be mutually beneficial? And he says in parentheses, if you think he can get back to at least league average. So I'm going to let you answer that first, but before you do, I just want to point out that he did agree to an extension last year, a short one just for 2 years to buy out his first couple arbiters, so he is under a guaranteed contract for this year. He's making 6.6, so he has another year of arbitration in 2022, and then he would hit free agency after that. But do you think a deal like that, where you're maybe ripping up the 2021 and setting a new deal there, and then another year or two after that, is possible? Would that be something you'd look into?
I mean, if I was a team, I would. Because I really don't think that Benintendi just went from where he was in 2018
first
to where he, yeah, it's to where he is now. Like, that's just incredible. Like, that would be just like really impossible. So yeah, I mean, if he's willing to look at an extension to buy out, you know, a couple years, I would actually think about it.
Yeah, I think I disagree, and I don't really want to. I for a long time, I've thought of myself as a Benintendi believer, and I just remember seeing him. I was still living in Massachusetts when he got drafted. That was my last year in Massachusetts, so I saw him in Lowell a bunch when he first got drafted, and I just remember he was the best minor league player I've ever seen. He just absolutely never should have played in Lowell. It wasn't fair. And I saw him in Portland after that too, and I've obviously seen him with the Red Sox, and he just looks like a hitter. And it just looks like it should work. But I don't know. I'm worried. When I actually, like, take feelings out of it and kind of think about it as objectively as possible, I just am more worried than I thought I was. It's really been since halfway through 2018 that he's been good. I don't want to like trade him for whatever. I think that they should keep him and hope for a bounce back, but I would sort of be playing it year by year with Benintendi if I was the Red Sox.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Like, I looked into like some Statcast stuff, and basically he's just like being just like really just patient in the zone and then like swinging out of the zone, which basically tells me that you're totally lost. So yeah, it's pretty crazy, like, just how kind of far he's fallen.
He needs to have a big April next year.
Yes.
Wherever he is, because if he gets off to a bad start, he's the kind of player that sort of gets in his own head and it just snowballs.
Yep, agreed.
So Sox Junkie asks, if there isn't a mutual interest between Bauer and the Red Sox, God willing, Who is the next top starting pitcher that is available? Sox Junkie really likes Taiwan Walker, but would be curious if we preferred Stroman or Ray or Mike Minor or anybody else. So taking Bauer off the table in terms of free agents, starting pitchers that you think are interesting.
I guess for me, it would definitely be Marcus Stroman. I mean, I liked him when he was with the Blue Jays. You know, he has just like this really awesome kind of just attitude kind of thing that maybe can be off-putting, but I don't know. I kind of like it. But definitely out of those guys, out of Walker, who, yeah, he looked good for a bit with the Mariners and a bit for the Blue Jays, but then kind of tumbled a little bit. Robbie Ray, I don't even want to touch whatsoever. And then Minor, he really backtracks. So out of those guys, I think I would be willing to see, you know, Stroman in a Red Sox uniform.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. When Jake and I talked about or put together a 2021 roster, like a month or so ago, I had Stroman as sort of my quote-unquote big signing of the offseason. I also had Taiwan Walker as a smaller signing. I don't really think he's going to get that much money that he's going to be there. So Stroman, I'm a big Stroman guy, and like you, I'm extremely low on Robbie Ray.
Yes.
I want nothing to do with Robbie Ray. I think a couple other names that are free agents this year that could be interesting. I've always loved Masahiro Tanaka, and it would be nice to make Yankees fans mad with that. James Paxton, another former Yankee, although I don't know what his health situation is. I wouldn't really touch that. John Lester is probably going to be a free agent. Again, he's obviously not John Lester of old, but there's some intrigue to that. I mean, there's a lot of, like, number three starters out there. Jose Quintana, Rick Porcello, Jake Odorizzi. So there's a lot of, like, names like that. But Trevor Bauer, as much as I would prefer them not sign Trevor Bauer for reasons both baseball-related and not, he's really the only guy that you can kind of look at as an ace, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why I don't think that the Red Sox are going to sign him. Like, I think that he's just going to make just way too much money somewhere else.
So I guess that brings us, we can jump right into the next question, which was from Matthew Kitson. I don't know if you saw this tweet from Trevor Bauer last night, but he tweeted a plane ticket to Boston and said, "Hey, Red Sox," and he added the team account, "You up?" So that got a lot of people talking, and Kitson just wants to say, what do you make of this?
That's interesting. No, I didn't see that tweet.
Yeah, I saw it when he asked the question. I hadn't seen it before. I will say I don't make anything of it. I don't think teams are really talking to players right now. I don't know what Bauer is doing in Boston, but I feel like he just wants attention. And also him and Carabas, I think, are a little buddy-buddy, which is a relationship I won't get into in this podcast. But I feel like he just wants attention.
Probably.
And I think, for whatever it's worth, I think there's a better chance than you seem to that the Red Sox will be in on it, just because, especially if he sticks to what he said before about signing one-year deals, which I'm not really holding my breath on, but I think that would be more palatable to a team like the Red Sox, who could kind of flex their financial muscles for a year. But
that's fair.
This tweet specifically, I think it's just a guy who likes attention, looking for attention.
Yeah.
So Floyd asks, he's got a little tinfoil hat going on here. Any reason or any chance the Red Sox got off easy on their sign stealing thing, in part because they agreed not to rehire Alex Cora?
I don't think so. I think their quote unquote sign stealing thing wasn't, you know, so, you know, egregious. It definitely compared to the Astros.
Yeah, and I also think that for whatever reason, it's possible that the Red Sox players just didn't talk as much as some of the Astros guys did, and not as much got out publicly, which helped them. But yeah, I don't think as dumb as Rob Manfred is, I don't think he would be dumb enough to pull something like this with public perception so far against him. I don't think he would do anything like that. like that.
Yeah, I agree.
The big man asks, if there is a Red Sox pitcher you could bring back from the dead to put in the rotation, who would it be? From the dead makes this tough.
Yeah. Can we just bring back Babe Ruth and just put him in the lineup?
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I was going to say Cy Young because he's the Cy Young. I don't know.
Yeah.
Around the Diamond podcast, this is a way too broad of a question, so I will narrow it down. He asks, or she asks, what your ideal offseason for the Sox would be. So I am not going to make you lay out an entire offseason, but just one move in particular that you think would be, that is like top of mind for you. Whether it's a specific player or just like a general approach.
Honestly, it's to focus on the extensions, to be honest. Either Bogaerts, Devers, or Verdugo. That's what my ideal offseason would be, to be honest.
That's fair. I would say, I don't think this is the biggest focus, and I don't think this is the number one thing I want, but I want them to do something else at second base. I am sick of this position. Every year, it seems like they won't sign a cheaper guy, and they'll just sign either somebody super cheap like Peraza, or maybe stick with what they have, which is, seems to be a direction they might go in this year with Arroyo and Munoz, and say, combine somebody, we'll figure it out, and they'll get the same amount of war as the other guy, and that never really works. So I don't need them to break the bank for like DJ LeMahieu or anything like that, but just like sign like Cesar Hernandez or something like that, and just put somebody who you know is going to be solid at that position.
Yeah, I wouldn't be upset about that as well. Like, I was really hoping that they were going to sign Cesar Hernandez as well, but
he's back on the market this year. He's once again at the top of my list. The second base is turning into what shortstop was after Nomar before Bogaerts. They just get somebody competent there.
Exactly.
Gabriel Angelini. I don't really have an answer for this, but if you do, you can say. If you don't, that's okay too. He wants to know, talking about the coaching staff, any names involved, not for manager, but for other positions?
Sorry, Gabriel, I don't know.
I'm not going to pretend I know the market for pitching coaches and first base coaches and stuff. I will say that I hope that they keep guys like Tom Goodwin and Carlos Fables, just because I like them a lot, but I don't really have a strong understanding of how valuable any coach like that is or is not, which is not to say that they aren't valuable, just that stuff is behind closed doors, most of what they do. And the last question is from Jeff Wax. Actually, we already talked about this. Current players most likely DFA'd. We spent most of the podcast on that, so we won't rehash that. So that is going to do it for the show today. You can rate and subscribe and do all that other stuff. Tell your friends everything that you hear at the end of every podcast you've ever listened to. You can follow us on Twitter. Shelly is at ShellyV_643. I am at Over the Monster. You can find our writing at overthemonster.com. We get stuff up there every day, and we will throughout the off season. I think I got everything, right?
Yeah, you did.
All right. We're going to end it there, and we will be back with you next week.